Hi, I'm Nicole Lorenzi.
I'm Michelle Hosso.
I'm Andrew Clancy.
And we're going to play a little song for you that I wrote slash adapted from a song that you might know called Starlight. What's the name of it? Starlight, Star Bright?
Yeah, I think so.
Who knows names of nursery rhymes? Nobody. All right, here we go. I'm just looking for a bright, bright light, a twinkling star to light the road I roam. And when I find it, it will shine, shine, shine. Guide this wandering traveler. Dragon and incorporates a little bit of Rockabye Baby into it as well. I built a ship for just us two. Sail away, the ocean blue, and on our ship I will sing to you. Hush, 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 don't say a
to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And we are joined by a couple cast members of Motherhood Out Loud. We have Michelle Hosso, Nicole Lorenzi, and Andrew Clancy.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. So if you are listening at home on the episode, you've already heard them perform a little bit for us. Thank you guys so much for doing that. It sounded fantastic.
Thank you. It was really fun.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah. It was really cool. We've been playing with this kind of like stealing the NPR Tiny Desk concept, but like trying to bring it to, you know,
a one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, tiny apartment
yeah.
concerts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tiny apartment. I love it.
Yeah, so it's super fun. Cool. But yeah, so tell us about Motherhood Out Loud.
So it is a fairly new play. It was written in 2011, I believe, and it is by 14 different playwrights. You ready for this?
Oh my God. Yeah.
It is by Leslie Alzavian, Brooke Bergman, David Kale, Jessica Goldberg, Beth Henley, Lamis Isak, Claire Lezebnik, Lisa Loomer, Michelle Lowe, Marco Panette, Teresa Rebick, Luann Rice, Annie Weissman, and Cheryl L. West. So It's basically an episodic journey through all the many adventures of parenthood, taken from the perspectives of many, many, many different types of people. So it's very monologue driven. There are a lot of monologues in it, but there are scenes that involve multiple actors as well. And it's kind of cool the way that it's designed. First of all, I'm just going to read you this little production note thing. Mm-hmm. It's important to hear about the process here. So Motherhood Out Loud can be presented as a reading with scripts on music stands, or it can be fully staged. The play can involve as many actors as you choose, and as few as four, three women and one man. If the production is presented with four actors, here are the role assignments. So this is what was given to our director, Elizabeth Mazur-Levin, who's awesome. Shout out to Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And she decided, she thought about it, you know, she wanted to do this show, and she gave thought to casting a shitload of people, you know, and having this massive cast, but then she decided to go with the four-actor model. So we are each playing 5 to 11 roles.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, my God.
And the way the show is structured is with this set of fugues. So there are these fugues that kind of anchor the show along that involve most, if not all, of us. So there's, like, fast births, first day, which is first day of school, sex talk, stepping out, and coming home. So there are all these fugues that are just like super fast segments that talk about these particular anchors in every parental experience, if you will. So it's really awesome, and it's been a great challenge, I think, for everybody. Yes. Just the nature of it. It is nonstop, and when you're not on stage, you're probably about to go on stage, mm-hmm. or you're about to give a one of your fellow cast members a prop or a mm-hmm. or
an instrument
or an instrument right. or you're which striking is something. We added. Yeah. Right, so we should talk about that. Yeah. So one of the things about not doing this in a music stand, like stage reading type structure, is that there are times throughout the play where it comes to just kind of a hard stop. Mm-hmm. And we had to figure out how we were going to smooth out those transitions. Mm-hmm. And so Elizabeth, being an actor's director, actually read our resumes. You know, a lot of casting directors don't read resumes, and it really pisses me off. I always read resumes when I cast a show.
That's infuriating, because I put so much care into, like, what special skills should I list?
Exactly. Because, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if you ever audition for Elizabeth Mazur-Levin, she is going to read your damn resume. So that's
she's
going to
know
did.
That I play guitar, ukulele, and banjo. It's going to be great.
That's exactly what she did. And she's nice. Like, so you guys are all musicians, and so what do you think about this idea? So we just had this idea of writing / arranging new music based on children's lullabies and nursery rhymes, and letting that serve as incidental / transition music. So that's part of what you heard today, and I think I'm going to pass it on to Nicole to talk a little bit more about that, because she's an actual bona fide songwriter.
Yes, whatever that means.
I can make stuff up. Yeah, I was really excited when Elizabeth had, you know, kind of drew us out about the idea of putting live music in, and it was, you know, at the beginning, it wasn't necessarily, let's write some songs. It was just, what do you think about the idea of incorporating live music, and what would that look like? Mm. And there was a really great brainstorming from kind of the cast about it. And I believe Megan, who is not here tonight, had this idea of using nursery rhymes and lullabies that are well known, and either rearranging them or... And I think, I'm not sure who brought to the table the idea of, I think Elizabeth said, well, what if we rewrote them? Mm-hmm. And then I sort of said to her, well, what would you want me to rewrite, the lyric or the melody? And she was sort of like, well, I'd like you to rewrite the lyric, like actually rewrite the story of the song in your own words. And I was like, okay, cool.
So basically what I did was I took the chords, the original chords and chord changes from the songs. There's a third song you didn't get to hear tonight, which is based on Humpty Dumpty that Megan sings with ukulele. And I just kind of, like, that was the first one I wrote. And basically what I did was I just sat down and said, what is this story about? And then when you go through and you read the full, all the verses and everything of these nursery rhymes, we were all just having this crazy experience of, like, this shit is dark.
It's dark. Yeah. It's fucked up. Yeah. You know, it's very, like, you know,
it's dark.
Brothers Grimm shit, you know, like all those early nursery rhymes. Yeah.
So I was just like, man, this song's about a person, let's say Humpty Dumpty is a guy, but a person who is like really insecure and builds a giant wall so that they can feel good about themselves and like they're sitting above everyone else. And the result is that they end up falling off and falling apart, like literally breaking to pieces, which is an expression that we use in our society. Oh, I fell to pieces. And so that's kind of like where I took the seed of that idea from, was just that story, which is a very human story and something we all recognize. And I wrote a little ditty for her based on that idea. And the second one we did, this kind of, Elizabeth wanted something, she just was like, puff the magic dragon and, you know, whatever. And that song particularly comes in a place in the show that is a monologue right after a monologue I do about my son who wants to dress up like a girl. He feels that he's a girl. And the monologue to me is really about devotion and devotion, which Puff is very much about. It's about this little boy and this dragon. It's this duo, this magic duo, and they build a boat and they sail everywhere together and nothing can hurt them, right? And then, of course, as the song goes on, it, like, you know, just terrible sadness of the boy getting older and the dragon never gets older, which, you know, didn't make it into the song. But just, that's where I got the ship idea from, you know, the idea of building a ship that's just for the two of you. And it's this sort of dual experience. And musically, I was inspired by, when I thought about the idea of devotion, I thought of all those 1960s love songs that are just so pure in their lyric and their, there's nothing dark about them. They're just like all those Beach Boys songs. I mean, they're just simple and lovely and just that, da 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 da, you know, shabab shabab. And like, you just, the minute you hear that, you're just like, man, you know, it just like warms your heart. So that's kind of like some of the process I went through with some writing some of the stuff.
Yeah, and it was really cool. We had a cool little like brainstorming session, and Andrew plays cello and ukulele.
Which added so much.
We're like, yeah, awesome.
Beautiful.
So yeah, we just sat in a room and went, what are we going to do? And and Nicole is amazing. She was just like, because Elizabeth is a singer. She's a music theater performer herself. So she's a singer, but she's not really a trained musician, you know? So she would be like, she would listen to something and she's like, okay, so I want something that
this is a great impression of Elizabeth. I wish we could see it.
and so I turned it to Andrew and I'm like, can you arpeggiate the chords? Yeah. And so he does. And she's like, yes, that's what I want.
That is such a good impression.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm good at impressions.
Yeah, that was great.
For listeners at home, there was a hair toss that happened.
Fantastic.
I'm interested in this cool thing that you guys bring to the table, and that you are doing dual duty so much throughout this show. I think that's really interesting. I think it's really commendable. What are some of the benefits to that, and what are some of the challenges? Like, do you find yourself thinking, like, are you compartmentalizing? Is that, go ahead.
Between the music and the acting,
the wearing of many hats throughout the course of one performance.
I mean, for me, it's been great. It helps me stay super involved throughout the entire show, which I like, you know. And I am continually just involved in the story, either musically or as an actor. Whereas if the music wasn't there, I mean, I'm still a part of the ensemble pieces and have a couple of solo pieces, but the putting on the hat of the musician makes it feel like I'm even, I guess to be honest with you, before we added the music, I kind of felt more like the my placement in this play was like just very spread out. Like I kind of like have a solo piece in the near the end of Act One, and then another one at the end of Act Two, and then a couple spliced bits of scene work here and there. But adding the musician component really like fills this whole show out for me, and it also gives me a whole nother character to play with that has this separate journey from the other characters I play, because he's this barista musician that comes in at the beginning and you see him go into work and then he has a break time. And so it's, for me, it just adds a lot of different fun elements to the story that weren't necessarily inherent in the script. And
right.
That to me is a riot. I love doing that sort of thing. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, and I actually have a question. So the show is about motherhood pretty much. And I'm wondering, you know, as the only man in the show, yeah. like kind of what role do you play within the context of the show?
Sure.
Yeah. Talk about your pieces, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah. So the pieces that I'm involved in, that are solo pieces, the first one is called If We're Using a Surrogate, Why Am I the One with Morning Sickness? And it's about a surrogate, a gay couple using a surrogate to have a baby, and all of their like their challenges as they go through that very, very expensive and highly dedicated and trust work, like trusting process. You know, there's that fear that by the end of it, you're not going to end up with this child that you've invested so much time in, not to mention money. He actually doesn't mention the money, but I just know from researching it's incredibly expensive.
Right.
And also dealing with, specifically, this story deals with Santa Claus's assumption that when my daughter sits on her lap, that there's a mother at home, and Santa asks, "Have you been a good girl for mommy?" And that's kind of what starts me off on this whole tear about, you know, like, we live in an age now where families can be, there's no clear-cut defined roles anymore. Families can be one parent, families can be two gay parents, families can be two trans parents. Parents are parents. They're people who come together and love a child and take care of a child. And that's really what that story is about, which I find touching and relate to quite a bit when I tell that one. And then the second one is more about coming home and having a shift in relationship, coming home to live with my mom, and having this relationship dynamic shift where suddenly I've been the son my whole life up until this point, and now I'm home taking care of my mom, and what does that mean, and how am I going to keep her feeling supported when I guess there's going to be spoilers here.
There's spoilers.
She's, you know, it comes to light that she's in the early stages of Alzheimer's. And so there's just this major responsibility change where I realize, like, I am going to have to become the parent now. The roles have shifted. And kind of there's a sadness to that, but there's also a great sweetness in the story, because I don't think, I'd like to hope, maybe I'm a weirdo, I feel a very strong connection with my mom that I think is unique to sons and mothers, and I really connect with that in this piece. Like this author David Kale, it's very clear that, like, you know, while this was a struggle, like, he knew it was the right decision to stay home and take care of his mom because of how loving their relationship has always been and how connected they were. So there's, you know, being a gay parent and being the child that becomes the parent are kind of how I come to play in this story about motherhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's pretty awesome.
So are your different role changes, are those pretty much limited to like the beginning and end of scenes, or is there times where you switch characters in the middle of a scene?
I switch characters in the middle of a scene. I turn into a child in the middle of a scene, which is actually really fun.
Well, yeah, and there's in the piece about taking care of the mother. I'm playing both characters. I'm speaking on behalf of the mom and the story.
There's a lot of that. It's just like when someone's telling you a story. There's so much of it in the show because there are all these storytelling monologues where it's like. You know, and then she asked, da-da-da, and then I said, and then he asked, whatever. Yeah. But it's not like a literal, I'm a different character now. It's just sort of the taking on the voice of the character that you're sort of playing in the story you're telling. Mm-hmm. But Michelle does do some fun switching.
Yes. I literally, actually switch, yeah. There's all kinds of really cool stories that are represented here. And in one of the stories, Megan, again, who's not here, plays the mother of a biological son and an adopted Chinese daughter. Mm. And she talks about her experience talking to other people about the fact that she has a biological child and an adopted child. Mm. And all the questions that people feel they have the right to ask. Mm-hmm. And so I play the really, really annoying woman, or I play kind of like every annoying woman that she encounters at the park, who's like, oh, your daughter's so beautiful, where is she from? Oh, are you teaching her Chinese? Oh, did you go to China to get her? Oh, you know, like, do your son and daughter get along? Oh, you have a biological son, so it's not you're infertile, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, just things like that that people ask that are, you know, are probably well-intended, but they're just kind of clueless and don't really understand, like, that particular journey. So in that scene, I also turn into a kid. who asks who I modeled on a kid that I sometimes babysit, whom I adore, who's like super excitable. And her name is Maud. And she takes these huge breaths between every single sentence. She's like, and then I got this Barbie, but then you know what? Her hair was the wrong color. And then every single thing that she says, she does this like huge, dramatic, exasperated breath between every single thing she says. So I literally jump off of a bench, turn a chair around, and boom, and then I'm a kid. And then I turn back into the adult. So
interesting.
So that does happen too. But mainly it's just like we're switching between these like different scenes.
Well, that is intriguing to me. So I'm curious about character work because it seems like something that you do a lot. And I think all of you do. It sounds like a lot in this. But it sounds like you especially. Are there ways that you found that making the character change easily readable? Are there ways that you've found that you can make something that might be like a surface level character, or maybe like a second or third level, maybe is the deepest it goes, but are there things that you go like, this is my, are there tricks to that? Are there things that you go like, these are my tools to do that? Or or is it just that you're talented?
there's a lot of process involved. One thing that's really cool about this show, and first of all, I should say, I'm not even playing the most characters. I think Megan is, right? She's playing 11. I'm playing 10. How many are you playing?
I haven't counted. Is that something I was supposed to do? I'll go home and do it now.
No. So we're all doing it. So for me personally, I have been a nanny for 7 years. So I know pretty much every single one of these women. And so I have been able to draw from my own life experience and model these characters on specific people in most instances. In a few other instances, another thing that's been really cool is there's, for example, I play a Palestinian Muslim woman in one of the scenes. And that is, it's written into the script, really. The way that it is, the language that's used, it's very obvious that the character has an accent. Mm. And that happens for me for a couple different pieces. Yeah. It's really, really clear that there's a dialect. And so I had to just, for the one that's by Lamise Isaak, she's Palestinian. I'm like, okay, so this is probably based on her Palestinian mom. So then I just researched that accent, and then also, actually, my opera training came into play there because I use my IPA to help me with accents. Mm. It helps me tremendously.
That's how we learned it in acting school.
Did you learn IPA too?
Yeah.
I didn't go to acting school.
But yes, that is how we.
Yeah, that's
and phonetics.
The best.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you learned IPA as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
I wish I remembered more of that.
Right. I have to reference
it
all the time.
Yeah, I use it all the time. It's
look it up when I start.
Totally.
No, it's funny how often like we end up using IPA because literally it's Holy Week right now, and so we're like at a church constantly, and our church job is at a Polish church.
Uh-huh.
And we had to sing, and so for the bilingual Holy Thursday Mass, we had to sing a couple hymns in Polish.
Mm-hmm.
And you should see my score. It's just like riddled with.
I also love that I got someone else's score from last year, and I have somebody else's IPA written in, which is funny to me. Just so many people use it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Like in choir singing.
So
it's so funny.
Yeah,
it's
a great tool.
Super valuable.
Yeah, it's
so
probably singers, actors, and like linguistic scholars that use it.
I mean, there's just things that your ear has to get used to hearing, and you're just aided so much by having this standard tool you can use. Oh, okay, it's that sound. All
right.
You
yeah.
know,
right.
like,
totally.
I wasn't hearing that. I'm glad
right.
this is here to tell me what sound to make.
Yeah.
I'm really glad this Z is the soft J sound.
Because
I would have never guessed that when you wrote a Z there.
I have a question for you. So as an opera singer in a play, like, is this one of your first forays into straight acting, or do you act frequently?
No. So I went to school for opera,
mm-hmm.
And then I went down that path for a while, and basically I was an opera singer for a few years out of school and decided that it's not what I wanted to do. It just wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and I found that that my particular skill set was not the best fit for opera. And so I had started in theater. And then it kind of evolved from there. And then after, you know, taking a complete hiatus and traveling for a while and trying to, like, find myself, I came back and I started singing a little bit again. And then I started doing music theater. And that more legit music theater, like Sondheim and that kind of thing. And that seemed to be, like, a better fit for me. And I've always loved acting and I've always loved Shakespeare. So that was... So I kind of went back to my roots after that.
Cool.
So I went back to acting and Shakespeare. And so to answer your question, it's not my first play. However, it is my first straight play in 6 years.
Oh, wow. Mm. I didn't know that.
Which is kind of crazy.
You're kicking ass.
Do you find that the classical music... Oh, sorry. Do you find that the classical music training informs your acting?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find it definitely does. Dovetail back to what you had asked before about the differences in characterization, I rely on my voice so much for that in portraying different characters. And another one of the characters that I play is a woman who's clearly in a lower socioeconomic class. And again, that's written into the script, like you can tell by the English that she uses, by the language that she uses. And I was able to pull on my vocal training to figure out where to place her vocally.
Yeah.
And you know, one of my big things was, so one of my dear, actually, opera singing buddies in San Francisco, Maria Mikienko. Hi, Maria. I know she's going to listen to this. She's actually originally Russian, but her family immigrated to Michigan when she was 9 years old. And in this particular piece, the woman references that her son, who's now in the military, the piece is all about what a woman goes through, what a parent goes through when their child has to go off to war, and like what that is like. It's one of the really, really heavy pieces in the show. The show is like 80% comedy, but there are some that are just like, that really, really get you, and this is one of them. And she references that her son was an EMT in Detroit. So I call up Maria and I'm like, hey, so can you give me an idea of like a suburb of Detroit where there might be like, you know, people who are maybe in a lower, you know, mid-lower socioeconomic class where people go into the military a lot as like a career path. And she's like, Flint, Michigan, rewatch Roger and Me, you know, Michael Moore's first film. And I'm like, oh yeah, brilliant. That's Thank you, brilliant. Maria. I'm like, oh yeah. So I did. I rewatched Roger and Me, and now I've watched it like 8 times in the past, in as many weeks. And I based it all. It was fascinating because the upper crust, like the 1% in Flint that was not at all affected by the GM closures, have a very, your very standard Midwestern, like really flat A's and like Afghanistan and stars and just really high. And and then as the socioeconomic class goes down, it becomes more and more Southern. So the accent that I landed on is like a blend between the Midwest and a Southern dialect. And it's been that's something that I have relied on a lot is my vocal training to find these, you know, these little places and anchor my character in their speech, because it's all, again, it's all in the script, you know, like it's written in the script. So
wow. I mean, so now that I've heard kind of like this, you know, the spectrum of what you guys are doing, I'm interested in with the stories that you're telling. Could you, Nicole?
Yes.
Pointing at you, which is podcast gold.
this is Nicole speaking.
Yes. So, like, what are some of the characters that you're portraying?
I have the most monologue? I have a lot of, I'm monologue heavy. Mm-hmm. My track is more so monologues than interactive stuff. So I have a lot of storytelling, direct audience storytelling. I play a woman who, I do a whole piece about sleep deprivation. So, and then the play kind of starts at newborn and works up in age. So young parents to, as you get older, what your experience is. Second act, we're going into graduating. We're going into son going to college. We're going into all that. So beginning is a lot about, you know, younger children and babies. My first character is dealing with sleep deprivation. My second piece, it's
hilarious,
which is just, it's really, so it's just like super over the top. And I just get to like be nuts, which is fun. And my second piece, which I think is it's definitely my favorite piece, but as I mentioned before, was the piece about a woman whose son is a woman telling, you know, just battling with how her son coming to her and, you know, saying, I want to wear a dress to this big event at our temple. And just, yeah, I think the beauty of these pieces, Michelle did mention that there are some that are really heavy, but I do think what's amazing about them, like that piece particularly, they're buoyant. They have so much heart. Like, they will get you and they will, like, you know, make you emotional. But at the same time, I think what's so lovely about this piece and true to parenting is everything's kind of bittersweet. You know, it's like nothing, you know, it's just all got this sweetness to it and this heart to it, because you're talking about love. I mean, it's one of those pieces where I like to say when approaching acting and roles, where's the love? Find the love, you know. Where is the heart of this piece? And this piece is so easy to do that. It's so easy to find that empathy. So that's my second piece, is she's just telling the story about, you know, what do you, she's a single mom, she's divorced, and her, you know, my kid really wants this, and if I pass judgment on him, what's everyone else gonna do? And just her battle with that, and then letting him wear the dress to temple, and what happens when she has that experience. My third piece is a wonderful story. A woman who marries a man who has a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old daughter. I'm sorry, no, she doesn't marry him. They never get married. But is with a man, is in love with a man. And walking into that family for her, and as somebody who is not a biological mother to the girls and doesn't feel that she's fit to be a mother, and sort of her dealing with that. And then at the end of it, realizing that being a parent is being selfless, you know. Mm. So she kind of realizes she'll never be a part of the family, and she steps out of the situation. And then one of the little girls calls her, and she got, you know, now she's 16, and she got in a car accident and says, "Can you come pick me up?" And she realizes that, and she says, "Can I stay with you?" And she says, "No, you have to go home to your mom," you know. So it's, and that's sort of realizing what unconditional love is giving the person what they need. And then I have a piece about my son going away to college, which is super fun.
with fun Andrew.
The idea, this piece, speaking of music and sound, he's a, I have a son who is a musician. And this piece is fantastic. The crux of this piece is the idea of quiet. So after the kid leaves, and it elevates that idea by having the son be a musician. So the son goes to school, and I come home, and I hear this, which is nothing. And the, what that does to you. And I think we all know that feeling of walking, you know, you say goodbye to someone and they leave, and then you walk back into the house that they've just been in with you.
Yeah.
And the quiet is deafening.
Yeah.
So, I think that's...
Yeah.
Then I play a super old great-grandmother, which is crazy.
Yeah, and then we have a scene together where she plays a great-grandmother, and I'm the 12-year-old great-granddaughter, and I'm interviewing her about motherhood. I have a report on motherhood, and so I'm interviewing her, and she reveals that she doesn't like being a mother.
Yeah.
And, you know, and stuns the great granddaughter and explains why, and they talk about birth control and
she's just like, you know what, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't have a choice. Mm. And I did it, but I wasn't great at it, in my, like, her own opinion, you know. But yeah, that's playing a 98-year-old woman or so, it's really tough.
You're amazing.
Great cast. I would echo, like, finding the way into character through voice.
Yeah.
Mm. I did a lot of that with these characters, you know. And the playwrights are so great. The playwrights are all different, and they all write in different voices, and they all write the characters in different voices. You can kind of, from the phrases and things that people say, pick up on a rhythm. But yeah, that's a Southern piece. That's the Beth Henley piece. Mm-hmm. So they are, you know, she talks about taking the train to New Orleans. So finding that lilting Southern old, you know, feel was like, it's tough. That's a challenge, that piece. But
it's awesome.
I'm working on it.
It's fun.
Well, I'm interested in, so it sounds like, it's cool that you guys have this wide spectrum of things that are lighter and things that are more heavy. And the thing that's also interesting is, to me, is just generally with people making art in this time period, I'm always curious about that, because I think that people that are making art right now are in an interesting and unique position, because on the one hand, we aren't making art in a vacuum. There's a lot going on in the world right now. But on the other hand, you know, sometimes a piece that you're doing, and like, for example, in this show, might be light and might not be the takedown of society that you want it to be, or something like that. Do you find that that kind of writing out that spectrum is soothing, or are there times where you found that something has, like, gone too far in a different direction than you realized you wanted to, or maybe there's a better way of asking this question?
I think I kind of get it. Yeah. There is some stuff in this show that, because it's so general, that's very stereotyped, and it's stereotyped on purpose. But sometimes it's hard to lean into that as an actor, because you feel like you're not doing your job.
Mm.
You're like, I'm selling this character short. And sometimes that's what it is, and you have to let it be what it is.
Yeah.
And you have to trust that that's funny, or that is illuminating, you know?
That's the risk, definitely.
Yeah. I think, and we had to really commit. And Elizabeth mentioned in rehearsal that that she and Keith Girth, the executive artistic director of Oil Lamp Theater, had a conversation about whether or not they were going to keep one of my pieces in, the one with the Muslim woman, and whether or not I was going to be in a job, and like what that was going to be like. And they decided to keep it in, and I was a little nervous about it. I was frankly a little nervous about it, but I decided if we're going to do this, we have to do it. And right. I have to fully commit to this. And I have to research the culture. And we have to research how an hijab is put on
right.
and do mm-hmm. it correctly. And, you know, and it was really important to me that... because what one thing that's great about it is it's written by a Palestinian woman, and it's and the character is awesome.
Oh God,
yes,
she's
so much life. Yeah.
She's so alive, and she's so thank you. She's mm-hmm. so like she's so funny and energetic, and like she has a great relationship with her daughters, mm-hmm. a very playful relationship with her daughters, where they're clearly not, you know, mm-hmm. they don't have any kind of like a weird. The situation going on, and it's just a family. It's just a family, and that's why I love telling this story. It not only is it really funny and fun, but I love that it's just like it's just a family, and mm-hmm. they're going through the same shit. You know, like the middle daughter's getting her period, yep. and so she tells a story about when she got her period, and she was, you know, she was visiting her cousin in Nazareth that she had a crush on, and she was trying to hide her pad because it was so big, so she threw it out the window. It's just, it's yeah. hilarious. It's yeah. a hilarious story. And so, yeah, so I personally have had a wonderful time portraying all these characters that are totally different from who I am. And I think the only way to do it is to go full out.
To lean into mm-hmm. it.
To just totally lean into it and try to do the best you can yeah. and not, you know, tiptoe around it.
So has being in a production about motherhood changed your perception of motherhood?
Yeah, I mean, so what I've been thinking about a lot lately is, you know, the all the times in my life that I've, like, encountered like a kid who maybe like made me think like, God, who raised you? Like who is your mother? Like that you grew up this way. And now like that perspective has been so softened by being yeah. part of this because like yeah. mothers and parents are just
it's
people
hard.
Who are trying to figure this out as they go along. And like they have an idea of what choices they should make, but they have no clue if their choices are going to pan out and turn this child into a respectable human being. So like that's what's really clicked with me is like, you know, especially now that I'm transitioning into working with children more often as a teaching artist in theater, I'm trying to see kids like through that lens of like, you know, people love this child.
No,
like you can't, you know,
I
you,
might not.
Yeah, but even if they're making me mad,
that's
like this,
amazing.
You know, this child is a human that's loved by other humans that yeah. brought them here. Like we gotta respect that.
Right.
And,
maybe it's just one,
yeah.
but it is one.
Right, right.
So, empathy.
Yeah,
yeah,
empathy. Thank
I think
you. That's
empathy
a that's a much more
what,
succinct way of saying it.
Yeah, that's for me what the piece
yes,
brings
yeah.
out. As I said before, like the heart in this piece is just. Huge and it absolutely has made me so empathetic and like so appreciative of my mother, which I definitely already was, but putting yourself in the shoes of, you know, as an actor you create the child you're talking about and you create the attachment you have, and just how heartbreaking it is when they're going, the empathy that parents feel for their children, they are living through it with them. And the amount of energy that must take. And
yeah.
just like, you know, I don't know how else to say
totally.
It.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. It's
yeah.
impressive.
It's very impressive. And, you know, as I said, I've been a nanny for a number of years. And I've worked for a lot of different families, a lot of different types of families. And so... Our artistic director, again, Keith, he sent out a questionnaire yesterday. He came to we had a run-through on Wednesday night, and he and our lighting designer sat in. And they both cried at the end, you know? And they're a couple straight men, you know? And they're, like, crying like babies.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And the end is really, really...
Yeah.
The end really gets you. So, so anyway, he sent out this questionnaire, and one of the questions he asked was what do you hope that people take away from this experience? And in my answer, I just said, you know, I hope that people walk away with a greater appreciation for their parents, that they pat themselves on the back if they are indeed, you know, themselves one, that maybe they have a little better understanding of people whose parental journeys are perhaps a little different from theirs. Mm-hmm. And And then just like understanding what warriors they are, you know, yeah, just like that, because really it's a battlefield and there are all kinds of struggles. Sometimes you can predict them, sometimes you can't. And this show really, really does a great job of taking you through all these different journeys, yeah, and all the different things that can happen and things anticipated and not anticipated.
And so, even though it was written a little while ago, not too long ago.
No, it was like in 2011, I think.
But a lot of the issues are even more relevant now than they were then. Yes. Like, particularly my monologue about a transgender, a child who's, you know, wants to be transgender. I mean, that has become such a huge, so much light has been shown onto that in the past few years, I think, in terms of kids and this gender identity thing. And I think it wasn't something everyone was so aware of as they are now, even 7 years ago. And I wasn't.
And it's why I'm so glad we're doing the Muslim piece. You know?
Yeah.
I'm so glad that we're doing it.
What's right good now about it is that it's about female identity, which is something that's just not a lot of people talk about.
And it,
right.
And as she talks, she addresses the Quran and the way the Quran deals, the way she interprets it.
Yeah.
In relation to female identity, which is really cool.
I love it. Flips like that potential for bad theology on its head.
You know, absolutely. She's just like,
She's just like, nope.
God is a woman.
It's not
how
it is.
Well, she is a woman.
Yeah.
It's so good.
But that's always a weird thing for me whenever someone's like, oh yeah, like the Quran is so violent. It's like, have you read the Bible?
Let's all
talk violence,
really. Yeah. Let's all be honest here. Let's not kid ourselves.
Have a good, long, hard look
what's
in the mirror.
What's a holy text without some violence? You
know?
Exactly.
So boring. No one's going to read that.
Yeah.
The guts.
Cool. Well, we have a few minutes left. So the last thing we do in all of our episodes is a 1 minute plug for each of our guests to talk about upcoming events. Sometimes that's very obvious, like if you have a show that you're coming on to talk about. And other times it's like, oh, well, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. So it's, you know, you can talk about a TV show TV show that you really like.
Someone who's making really bomb art, who you think deserves a shout out.
All
right.
So the floor is yours.
Sweet. Well, so we are obviously all in Motherhood Out Loud, and of course I don't have my cards. Okay, off the top of my head, it is Oil Lamp Theater, which is in Glenview, and the run is April 27th through June 11th.
Yes.
Thursday through Sundays. It's a long run.
Seven-week
run.
Wow.
Yeah.
Long. Do you have a show on Mother's Day?
Yes.
We do indeed, and it's sold
out. Which is also my birthday.
Yes!
Yeah, we are already sold out.
I would imagine,
It's a perfect
opening. An opening night is sold out. There is, I should mention, there is a free open dress rehearsal, or final dress, a preview, is Wednesday the 26th, and that's open to anybody who wants to come.
26th of April.
26th of April, correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, right around the corner.
Really?
And after that, I am I'm going to be premiering a new song cycle by Leo Schwartz, a local composer who wrote a song cycle about the 2016 election called We the People.
Nice.
Cool.
So that's going to be at the end of June at Stage 773, June 29th and
30th. Ooh, that sounds cool.
Well, feel free to come back on and talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I'll bring them on. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, this is Nicole. obviously I write music. It's really a side thing I do to my acting, but if you'd like to hear some of it, you can go to my website, which is NicoleLmusic.com, and there's a little 5-song EP that I released a couple years ago on there. It is a little darker, let's say, than Children's Nursery Rhymes, but it's all acoustic, it's all played live, and, you know, just stuff that comes out of my head. Just finished up a really cool multimedia theater piece by Seth Boakley, and created and directed by Frank Malgory. I feel like I'm saying his name wrong, but that's that's it, how you say it. Frank Magri, former director of Redman Theater. So it's a
awesome
puppet opera about Billy the Kid. And it's very, very cool. And if you go on my Facebook page, Nicole Renzi's Facebook page, you can see some pictures of it, which are beautiful. And it's a gorgeous visual piece. And we're bringing it back in September for a three-day festival here in Chicago. So keep an eye out for that. It's going to be at Lynx Hall. I'm also doing a piece in the summer, but they haven't announced casting yet, so I think I'm going to not say anything. I don't know. So, yeah.
That's fair.
Look for me doing a show this summer as well with Co-Candy Productions. Okay, yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
And, yeah, this is Andrew Clancy. Yes, please come see Motherhood Out Loud. And beyond that, I'm about to dive into a summer of teaching, which is really new for me and really scary. But I'm super pumped about getting my feet wet, doing more teaching, and especially educating kids who are from first grade through 12th grade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite a range.
Yeah,
kind of. I've been swearing. I'm going to say their name. And the company is called Compass Creative Dramatics. They're a children's theater. And they tour and they have week-long performance residencies where they meet the kids on Monday, audition them, and then Tuesday, and cast them, and then Tuesday start rehearsing with them, and wow, by Friday they're ready to put on like a full-length one-hour musical.
Oh my god,
amazing!
With an
audience. So, cool. Yeah, that's amazing. About to be what I do all summer. There's a fundraiser coming up for them on April 24th at the Beat Kitchen. I believe it's at 7.
That's in Roscoe, right?
It's in Roscoe.
Cool.
I should know the exact time. I believe it's 7:00. You can check their Facebook. It's Compass Creative Dramatics on Facebook, and there's more information there. Yeah.
Cool.
Damn, that's.
I love the idea of auditioning the kids and then cutting half of them.
That doesn't tend. I mean, that can happen.
Oh,
really?
Ooh. Because they can cast up to 75 kids in a show.
Yeah.
So, as little as 25 and as many as 75 kids in a show.
God,
don't tend to cut kids unless a residency specifically wants the children to have that experience of auditioning and not necessarily getting a part. But typically they all get parts. Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
You're cut.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with us, you can do that in a multitude of ways. You can head over to scopymag.com to see articles, older mostly, and you can also see a list of podcast episodes there. We have a bunch of other stuff too, photo essays, different really cool things to check out. If you want to keep up with us on social media, please do that. You can head over to Facebook, Scopy Magazine. We post regularly there. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at Scopy Mag.
And I, as always, am here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. We would love to get more microphones. We would love to get an audio interface that has more than two plugs. We're also working on getting a concert series up and running this summer, and we're looking at venue rental fees, and we need your help because we are poor. So if you head to scopymag.com, go to our about section, or anywhere, quite frankly, I've made it incredibly easy to donate. There are donate buttons galore. If you become a monthly subscriber for as little as $5 a month, we will give you a shout out on the show, and likely you'll get guilt-free, free admission to our donation-based productions. We're also working on some other incentives, like maybe recipe cards for vegan recipes and stuff like that. And if you do a one-time donation, we'll send you a handwritten thank you note in the mail. We just picked up stamps today, so we can do that now. Give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thank you so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.